Okay, should we get to the story? And again, the reason I want to talk about this is because I'm not hearing a lot of viable solutions to the school shooting problem. And it's one of the things that has been a blessing from COVID, if there are such things. And that is that we haven't seen school shootings like we had before COVID started. Anyone who thinks that this means that school shootings were going to go away was fooling themselves. Not that I know anybody who thought that. And I happen to believe they're probably going to get worse because people don't know how to cope very well. And we're seeing that with the pandemic. And so I shared with you stories how the pandemic has affected the mental health of people across the country. And so I expect, I mean, we're seeing, in fact, I was talking to a school administrator just recently, and they were talking about how violence is up in all the schools right now. And it's just that, you know, children, we haven't taught our children how to cope. And I think part of that is that we live in, you know, at least around here, we live in a very blessed society. It's hard to teach your kids how to cope when there's not a lot of huge challenges. And when you're always trying to, you know, when you have one generation after another that is trying to make things better for their kids than they had it, I think eventually that goes too far. And your kids need to have some heartache. They need to have some trials. There needs to be some suffering and some things to overcome. And I think that, you know, because of where we live and how we live and our desire to protect our children, we protect them right out of the ability to cope. And then here comes a pandemic and the coping skills are not there. So I think that's part of the equation as well. Heather joins us. She says hello. Mike says, oh, I'll have some very controversial opinions to solve the school shooting issue. David says, I don't know of many viable solutions, but I think Congress could find some if they got along. Well, we know that they're not making any attempts to get along. In order to solve problems, you have to focus on common ground. And the parties don't do that. They focus solely on what makes them different. And that tells you that they don't want to solve problems. If you want to solve problems, you focus on common ground. I mean, that's just simple to understand, right? Heather says they need, talking about the kids, they need to have life coaching classes to teach kids how to manage their thoughts, which will in turn change their behavior. And again, I lay a lot of this at the feet of the parents. And I understand the desire to have your children have a better life than you had. But there comes a point when you're going to do a disservice to your children with that philosophy and that mentality. So here's what happened if you didn't hear the story. I was watching the press conference just before we went on the air, and that's why it's top of mind for me. This is in Pontiac, Michigan. A 15-year-old at a high school starts shooting people. Three confirmed dead, 8 injured. This individual was arrested without any officers being harmed, I believe is the case. 9mm handgun, 3 15-round magazines. The father purchased the weapon on November 26th. So this is a brand new weapon. We don't know if the weapon was purchased for this individual. We don't know if the kid was bullied. I mean, it's still early in the investigation. And just another tragedy. The kid has lawyered up, is not talking to authorities, so we don't have any indication. And of course, everybody's going to rush to their platform of choice before they know all the facts. And they're going to start spouting, see, this is the reason for this, or this is the reason for that, and this is why we have to do this or why we have to do that. I prefer to wait for the facts, but in this case, I do think that we know enough to, you know, talk at least in generalities about this problem. We've been blessed to not have to face it for a few years now. It's not gone away. It's not going away. So I'm curious, is there a solution that is reasonable in your mind? Mike says, Jay pauses as he reads my comments. Internal dialogue is, uh-oh, don't worry, Jay. It'll be controversial but comprehensive. Jareen joining us on LinkedIn. Hey, Jareen, haven't seen you here before in the comments. Thank you for joining us. We love your comments here. Please feel free to share. Let me just preface this with some thoughts here about gun control in general and where we're heading as a society. And you may have heard me share this with you before, but I think it's very important to keep this top of mind. I believe if you are somebody who is in favor of gun rights, and I am, you know that I conceal carry, and I started conceal carrying after getting death threats, and I have concealed carried now for 6 or 7 years. And will continue to do so, and will continue to fight for my right to bear arms. But I happen to believe that the writing is already on the wall with gun control. I happen to believe that within a decade, maybe two, the right to bear arms will be gone in this country. And it will be because of a lack of desire to build on common ground and find real solutions. And why do I say that the right to bear arms will be gone? Well, it's pretty simple. Our children are growing up in schools where they have to do mass shooter drills. Our children are growing up, and as I've shared with you, the natural tendency for children is to be more liberal and to, I think conservatism takes conversion. And I firmly believe that as the generations pass of kids who are growing up doing these drills, watching people of their age get murdered in school, that eventually the tide will turn. And there will be enough people who were children growing up in this environment to exercise their rights to change the Constitution. And they will do it. And I think that we have to be fully aware of this, and that's why I believe it is incumbent upon those of us who want the right to bear arms, who believe in the right to bear arms, to lead out with solutions and to listen and to consider options and possibilities. Because if we sit there and just say, nope, Second Amendment, nope, Second Amendment, you can't touch it, Second Amendment, eventually that will go away. I just promise you, if you look at the country in general, we're turning more and more purple and more blue every single day. And I think it's because conservatives have abandoned trying to convert people to conservatism, and they've just started berating and name-calling the opposition. So they're no longer converting people to conservatism. And when you simply say, no, you can't touch my right to bear arms because it's in the Constitution, and you are unwilling to engage in honest discussions about measures that could still protect the right to bear arms, but possibly reduce mass shootings, if we don't lead out with those solutions, I think the writing's on the wall. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, they're going to have to come and get me, and I'm going to go down in a blaze of glory. Well, you know what? That may be an absolute possibility, because that right to bear arms is changeable. It is changeable by the people. And that's just my personal opinion. I think that is the writing on the wall. I think that is the future. Unless we can show that we are open, that we will engage in discussions, that we will consider viable solutions, not just anything. And if you know me and my background with fighting for Second Amendment rights, I spend a lot of time shooting down ideas from people who think that they know how to stop mass shootings by banning a certain type of weapon, for example. Because that's not honest to me, and it's not realistic. I mean, so often we hear people say, I don't want to take away the right to bear arms. I just don't know why anybody needs an AR-15. And they think that taking away AR-15s will stop mass shootings. Well, it won't. Today is a perfect example of that. So when somebody says, all I want to do is take away your ARs, that's not a viable solution. Because that's not all you want to do. Because we do the finger snap test. I need a new graphic for this. I got to write this down. Hang on. I'll remember it. Okay, I'll do it right here. The finger snap test. Okay, this is when we play a game to find out if something is realistic or not in the request. So those people who say, we just need to get rid of ARs. Nobody should have ARs. And then that's all we're asking for. I don't want to take away the right to bear arms, just ARs. Okay, so we snap our fingers, we do the Harry Potter wand spell, and all ARs are gone from society. So you got your wish. There's no more ARs, nobody has them, nothing. Do mass shootings stop? No. Do school shootings stop? No. Have you potentially saved some lives? Possibly. There is indication that certain rifles can do more damage from the round. They don't fire any faster than a semi-automatic handgun. They could potentially carry more ammunition, more rounds. Mike, I'm not going to read that. It's too long. It's too long, dude. maybe I'll read it, but it's pretty long. We got to keep it a little bit shorter. Where was I? Okay, so if we snap our fingers and ARs are gone, and then there's another shooting with a handgun, do you think the same people who said, we don't want to take away your handguns, we just want to take away ARs, do you think they're going to say, oh, well, we got rid of ARs, so I guess there's nothing else we can do? No, that's not what's going to happen. They're going to go after the next weapon of choice. And in my opinion, the solution is not weapons-based in our society, under our laws, under our structure. There are places where you can legitimately get rid of firearms. But people forget that we have these pesky little rights that make it possible, that empower people to not follow the laws. And they make it difficult to have a war on anything. That's why the war on drugs is not working. If you had a war on guns, it would be the same thing. The very rights that protect us are the very rights that allow the criminal to get away with things. So to me, the finger snap test shows that, or we call it the oh snap test. David wants to call it the oh snap test. Oh snap. We'll do the oh snap test and all the weapons are gone and we still have shootings. So then you're going to go after the next weapon. That's why tool-based measures, to me, in our society, are misguided. Because what we should be doing and what we should be asking for is identification and study and research into the mind and the mentality of the mass shooter. And we should be spending a ton of money to do this. And I know that there are people on my side of the aisle who have fought that. And I don't get it. I don't understand it. If we could, I mean, we have so many tools today that we have access to. There's algorithms out there that can tell if somebody's considering suicide based upon their Facebook profile. Now, that's tricky because you can't just take that person into custody and you can't punish them or take away their rights based upon an algorithm. But there have got to be other tools and resources that can be used that could potentially have an impact. I'll read it, Mike. It's long, but I'll read it. He says, the mass shootings are never going to end so long as the school board's administrators ignore the fact that they are the biggest contributors to the problem that lead up to shootings. These shootings don't happen overnight. They come as a result of years of ignoring small problems, perpetuating cliques, and so on. I speak from my own firsthand experience from my own middle school days and raising three kids in Utah. One of them is an Asperger's kid. Starts early as first grade. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but have there ever been a female mass school shooter? Yes, there have been a few, but if my memory serves, but it is typically a younger male that chooses to go this route. Now that doesn't mean, I believe the suicide attempt rate is much higher among teenage girls than it is boys. But for whatever reason, it's the boys that choose to go this route. David says there's no limit to what they will ban. I will fight focusing on the tool as something that is going to have a real impact. I don't think it will. And the other thing I would like to say is this, and this is something that may be controversial. I don't hear people talking about this because we always, once the shooting has been committed, we have a really hard time showing any empathy towards the shooter, which is understandable. But wouldn't you like to get to a place, wouldn't it be of value to get to a place where we can save the life of the shooter before they become a shooter? Wouldn't it be of value to find out what the warning signs are and perhaps get health, mental health or whatever help towards people who might fit into a particular category? I'd like to save the life of the shooter long before they ever go down this path. And if you can do that, and Mike, I think that this is what you're alluding to. If you can do that and stop this potential long before it ever happens, then isn't that a better path or better route to go? We have to at least try. Mike says problems are as follows. Young boys don't behave like little girls in elementary. Oftentimes, not all teachers. The presumed professional discusses options for the child. It's never the teacher's approach. It's virtually always the fault of the little boy. I'm talking about averages of males are the majority of the cases that shoot. Mike, I would suggest to you this is nothing new, but the rate of mass shootings has increased dramatically over the last few decades. What you're talking about is nothing new. David says, isn't that profiling there? That's the problem. But profiling youth to identify potential issues and trying to be proactive about those issues, not all profiling is bad. Profiling is bad when you're an adult and you're pulled over or you are presumed guilty because of your race or something like that. And I wouldn't support it if there was some algorithm that said, this guy has a potential to be a mass shooter. Let's take away his guns and his rights. That's what makes it very difficult. But as children, I don't see profiling as a bad thing if what you're looking for are warning signs. If what you're looking for are ways to help, ways to get involved early. Because there are a lot of commonalities among the mass shooters. Most of them are absolute loners. They don't hang around in the cliques. They are on their own path. They spend a lot of time on social media, but not interacting, just watching. And there are some, here's what I want to say. We need to get over the idea that we as parents can be everything that we need to be for our children. And get to a place where we understand what warning signs are and how to get help and what measures can be taken. Parents need to feel like they're on a team. I know this may sound like it takes a village, but I'll give you just a perfect example in my own life with my son. When he was in high school, we battled like you wouldn't believe. We battled. He was cutting class. He wasn't getting his work done. And man, the two of us went at it. And somebody suggested, why don't you see a counselor? And I'm like, I'm like, man, I know how to raise a kid. I don't know why I thought that. But it's seen as weakness to try and get outside help. It's still seen like this in our society. And from some convincing from my wife, I'm like, okay, all right, let's take him to see a counselor. Within minutes of my son talking with this trained individual, remember, I'm not trained. I had a crappy childhood. What business do I have, right? Within minutes, my son is identified as having hypersensitivity to loud noises and bright lights. And he always wanted to have his headphones in. And we took it as disrespect. Why do you always have to have your headphones on? So we're sitting there interpreting his actions in all the wrong ways. And I'm thinking that I can punish or yell him into compliance. But I didn't know what was going on in his head. I was not equipped to deal with those issues. First of all, because I didn't know they were there. I didn't know to look for them. He didn't know to tell me. You know, every time I'm like, why are you doing this, son? I don't know. And I'm just infuriated thinking he's making this choice, right? the minute that that diagnosis came, it changed my relationship with my son forever. Forever. Because suddenly I understood him. And suddenly I knew how to help him. And so instead of being an adversary, I then became a cheerleader and a friend and a counselor. And I knew how to help him. And I think this is the problem. I think parents, we need to recognize that we're not well equipped for a lot of this stuff. And it should not be seen as a weakness to get help. If you are battling with your children at all, I think the first, we need to change our society. So the first step is that you seek outside help, not the last step. I mean, what qualifies us to be raising these young minds? And the other thing is that I didn't grow up with social media around. I didn't grow up with video games and all those things consuming everybody's time and texting and phones and all of those things. Yet somehow I'm supposed to know how to raise a child in that environment. Parents, we're making it up as we go along here. And that's why I think that really, and Mike, I love that you're bringing up the teachers and the administrators. I think there has to be a paradigm shift with everybody, starting with the parents. I do see it because I know people who work in the school system. I do see a lot of change happening and a lot of new awareness and recognition in this regard. And I'm glad to see it, but we need to stop acting like we can handle everything. It was the same thing in my own life. It wasn't until I realized that I was facing issues bigger than me and I started talking about them instead of beating myself up, feeling like I should be able to handle them, that my life changed. But social media allows you to just kind of lock down and create this avatar of yourself online. And you fall in love more with your online person. And because you're not having regular interaction with people, they become inhuman to you. They become pawns. And we see this anywhere. We talk about this all the time on this show. We see this in politics with the hatred going on right now towards somebody who disagrees with you. I promise you, if you knew that person, you wouldn't feel that hate. We talk about it with road rage. I promise you that if you knew that person, you'd forgive them for forgetting to signal instead of acting like they made fun of your mother when they didn't see you in their blind spot. I promise you with internet trolls that if you knew those people. And I think that in each of our lives, when we've made room for somebody, when we've made room for people that we might disagree with, it is because we got to know them. Human interaction is a huge key here. Recognizing warning signs, realizing that you shouldn't fight it alone, parents. And I think specifically in Utah, we have a problem. We think that religion can solve all problems. And I'm just going to be very frank with you. That's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. And I think it's dangerous. I think it's dangerous. The feeling that I shouldn't be going through this internally because my religious beliefs should solve these problems. I shouldn't have these problems with my family because my religious belief should solve these problems. It's dangerous. It's absolutely dangerous. And we're seeing a lot of changes with that type of belief and understanding now. I think that what we need is a shift to where we can look outside of ourselves and look for help and not be afraid to ask for help. And I think government funding for help, it's one of the things I hear a lot as I've shared my own story and my own struggles. People are like, I want to get help for my kids, but I can't afford it. I want to get help for myself, but I can't afford it. I think healthy investment in mental health and early detection and those types of things can go a long, long way. The problem is that you've got conservatives who want Second Amendment rights, but they also don't want to spend money on government programs. And so it's like this double whammy. Well, you're going to give them the gun and you're not going to get them mental health help in the meantime. And this is something I'm trying to break conservatives away from, that not all government spending is bad. It needs to be on a state level for sure. But investing in mental health, I think, can go a long way into protecting the right to bear arms. I think there's a direct connection between the two. And that's where we have to get over ourselves. We have to be willing to ask for help. We have to be willing to provide help. And this is, to me, the next great step in our society. All right, lots of comments coming in here. Mike is still being very long-winded, but let's see if I can get you in here. Mike says, so the common solution is to go see a doctor. The doctor will then ask questions and then prescribe something, going the lines of mood-altering prescriptions. So that depends on the situation. I've had both, Mike. I've gone to a place as on my own mental health journey where I walked in somewhere and within 5 minutes I had a prescription. And it didn't help and it didn't work. I've also been places where the last thing they would do is give me a prescription. So I wouldn't broad brush the entire situation. I think part of this is we're being trained as a society that there's a pill for everything. And that is a problem for sure. We started out talking about coping and learning how to cope. And there's no pill that I'm aware of that can help teach you how to cope. And I think that should all happen first. Part of the problem with mental health is there's no study, there's no test, right? I can't go down and get a blood test that says, oh, you're bipolar. I can't go down and get a blood test that says, oh, you have these chemicals misfiring in your brain. So then it becomes subjective to some degree, and it does depend upon the professional that you go to. And that's a problem. David says the problem is that people are very often quiet about their struggles. I totally agree with you, David. We all put on airs about, you know, like when I'm in a work environment, I'm not sharing my heartache and my struggles. I will tell you this, during the hardest phase of my life, when I was in earnest consideration of ending it all, to the point where I had picked out a spot and I knew how I was going to do it and I knew when I was going to do it. Nobody around me knew. Nobody. If you would have asked my wife, my children, my coworkers, they would have told you that I was happy and that I had no issues. And there I was, days away. And it wasn't until my world came crashing down before I had the opportunity that I was forced to talk about it. And that's what saved my life, talking about it. That's what saved my life. And realizing that I actually had a considerable support structure around me, and that I wasn't being fair to them, and I wasn't being fair to myself by being quiet about it. That's why always the first thing that I say to anybody who is facing struggles is you need to tell somebody. And that's why the second thing that I say is if somebody comes to you and they say they are struggling, please, please be a kind listening ear. You may be the only one that they share it with. And if they get a negative response from you, that may be it. One and done. Let's see. David says, sounds like criminalizing to me. Not sure what you're referring to. Conlack joins us on YouTube. Is this a discussion about the shooting at the high school? Yes. They say, I want to share my take on this. Being there right in front of the situation and seeing people run, seeing people fall, and hearing gunshots. Please share your opinion. Mike says, teachers have to understand that parents are critical to the success of teachers with the school. However, there are no shortage of parents who don't care and just want the state to handle it. Given the CRT thing, I think a lot more parents are going to be involved, which is a good thing, but I don't think most parents even know what to look for. I don't think the CRT, critical race theory, is providing anything good as far as parental involvement. It's completely politicized. Nobody's actually learning what CRT is. It's being used to fundraise and to divide. It's not being used. It's just like masks. It's like, oh, good. We finally have parents involved in their child's life because they're at their first school board meeting ever and they're complaining about mask wearing. I don't think that this is going to improve parents' involvement with kids. I really don't. And most of the teachers I know will complain to you about when parents do get involved, it's because you're giving bad grades to my kids or something like that. Instead of helping their kids rise, they're ensuring that the kids don't have to move. That's just terrible. Conlack on YouTube says, our town is so small and everyone knows each other. It was a town here. Nothing ever bad happens. It's scary. And being right there was the worst part of it. I love my school and this is my home. I cannot believe. And David is saying this, saying, I'm so sorry. I can't imagine. I would like to say I understand what you're going through, but that would not be real. That would be disingenuous. I cannot imagine the horror. And part of the problem is there's just no reason to it. There's no explanation. You know, I hate to say it, but when there's an armed robbery or something, you're like, okay, at least it's greed. But with this, there's just no rhyme or reason to it. It doesn't make sense. It's so hard to process. I can't imagine what you're going through. I wish that there were some easy answers. I wish there was. David says, I'm struggled with that. The thing that there is always someone we can reach out to for help. It may not be somebody close to you. And I know it's hard to reach out to somebody on a phone, but trust me, it can make a difference. Mike says, I vote for this. Bring back phys ed at an early age, first grade, 30 minutes out of the day, daily. This gives little boys and girls something fun and loosely structured, but gets that high active energy that pents up all day. Give them a chance to just spend a half hour tiring themselves out. I think it's a start. David says, I live 30 minutes away from where the Aztec High School shooting happened at the end of 2017. I saw the deep pain that people there went through. Wow, Mike sharing where he planned to take his life. Oh, it's amazing how many people face this and face it alone. Conlack says, this is modern day America. This is the world we live in. Honestly, there's so much blame to go around and the controversy around this, but this is our country and what we've come to. I think that in every aspect of society now, here in America and other places, we are seeing people turn to hatred and to rage, to anger, to bitterness, to toxicity. We're choosing leaders that peddle in this stuff. It's just getting uglier by the day. I mean, I can't turn on social media without seeing it. I can't turn on the news. I mean, if you're, I don't have it on my list, but if you're watching what a couple of Republican congresswomen are saying right now, and this is like, they're on the extreme side, but you don't see the party, from what I've seen, coming out and saying this isn't right. And you're not seeing that because these women have support from Trump, who came out and joined them in their madness today. If you read his statement, it's full of lies. It's full of hate. And this is what's being celebrated now. This is what we're embracing. In all aspects of society, we have to choose better, or we're done for. David says, I appreciate your compassion tonight, Jay McFarland. Thank you, David. I've been through a lot of crap on my own, and I've seen a lot of people go through it. And I like to think that I'm to the point where I try and put myself in people's shoes and try to understand, especially when they disagree with me, or especially when they're facing trials. And we just don't see a lot of that today. We just jump so quickly. We just jump so quickly into the blame and the hatred and the anger. It's so easy. It's so lazy. It's so... the thing that we don't realize is it makes us all ripe for manipulation. We're all a leaf in the wind being manipulated, because instead of being taught... one of the most powerful lessons I ever learned in life came in therapy as a child when my parents were divorced. I think I was about 8 or 9. I'm not sure. I have a terrible memory for dates and times. But they thought it would be good to have us kids go to therapy. And I remember two things about therapy. Actually, three things. I just remembered another one. So I remember three things about therapy. The first was they had these giant pillows. It was in this room, and you could make these forts out of these pillows. The second thing was that they always had Pepperidge Farms Milano mint cookies. And those were a real treat for me now because of that. And the third was the teaching that you can either act or react. When you react, you put yourself in the control and mercy of other people. When you act, you maintain control, and you are in charge of your own person. That lesson has stayed with me my whole life. And I resolve to never let people control me. Now, I'm human, and of course it happens. And you probably see it happen here when we get some comments and I get fired up, or when we go down the rabbit hole. But we are living in a society that is exactly the opposite of that. The norm is reaction. And because the norm is reaction, we are now all ripe for manipulation. And the parties know it. They manipulate us into donating money and to continue to support their causes. Our leaders know it. They play on it. And it is just continuing to create this big divide. And I realize we've gone from school shootings to a much broader issue, but I do think they all play into each other. And then you add to that a world where you can completely sequester yourself into your own nice, comfy bubble. Social media helps you do it. We want it based upon what we like and what we block and what we share. And, you know, if you would have asked me way back in the 80s before we saw this thing called the interwebs, if you had access to all this information at your fingertips, would people would be more informed or less informed? I would have said more informed. But that's not the truth, is it? The truth is that people wander around less informed because they can so easily create a bubble around them. And because social media is so willing to help create that bubble. All living in our own echo chamber, no association with people who disagree with us. So we don't consider them human. They are now the evil enemy. They are Darth Vader and Palpatine. They're not Americans who just disagree with us, who have a different viewpoint, a different vision, a different perspective, and will never be forced to confront that because we make it a point. We go out of our way to not be around those people, either online or in person. So we're all being neatly divided into our tidy little groups where we all stare out at the other groups and mock and judge because our group is superior. We have a monopoly on truth. And the outcome, the end game on all this, it's ugly. And we're seeing it more and more in our society. We are seeing it more and more. So we were talking about potential solutions to mass shootings. I think an aggressive approach to mental health at all levels by parents, administrators, teachers, friends, and family is a huge part of that. I think Mike's brought up some interesting points. I think that focusing on the tool of choice is really just casting these people away. And if they don't have a gun, then they'll have a knife or a pressure cooker or a car, or maybe they'll just take their own life. But I don't want to cast them away. I don't want to cast them aside. I want to figure out how to help them so that instead of going down that path, they live a long and fruitful, wonderful life. Because early on, somebody saw a path that they were on and said, hey, let me help you out. Let me give you some human interaction. You know, I'll just give you an example of how this happens. And I'm sure all of you have experienced this to some degree. But when I was early on in my marriage, the whole LGBTQIA, is that what it is now, thing was completely different. People would mostly stay in the closet. I remember I lived in San Jose, California. And you'd go down to San Francisco, and there was one street, I think it was Gary Street, where those who were out were very vocal and very much in the public. But it was a completely different world, and I didn't know anybody who was out. And because of that, I formed some opinions based upon what I saw in San Francisco about this group of people. And I didn't know I was forming those opinions. I wasn't vocal about them, but I was forming some opinions. And I kept those opinions till I was living in Hawaii. I was managing a Kinko's in Hawaii, and I had an employee named David. His name is David Basford, and best employee I've ever had. Incredible guy. Lived in a home with special needs kids to be so that when he was not working, he was serving them. And we slowly got to know each other. And one day I find out that he's gay. And he finds out that I'm Mormon. And guess what we had both been doing? He had formulated a bunch of opinions. And I had formulated a bunch of opinions. But guess what happened to all those opinions? They all came crashing down. Why? Because we established a relationship with each other of trust based upon all of our commonalities. And that allowed us to make room for those minor differences. That's the beauty of human interaction. That's the beauty of actually seeking to get to know people who you disagree with, of listening to people who you disagree with, of considering them human beings. To this day, David Basford was the best employee I've ever had the pleasure of working with. One of the most honorable men that I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. And unfortunately, he died a few years later. In his youth. And it hit me hard. And it taught me so much. We don't look at people who are different than us as human beings anymore. And it's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. And that's why I hope that when you see the Marjorie Taylor Greens or the Lauren Boebert, whatever her name is, or the Trumps of the world, and you see them categorize people into one giant bucket, a bucket of hate, a bucket of fear, that you see it for what it is, and that we all realize that we are mostly the same. And you would know that if you spent some time with each other. But instead, we allow ourselves to react, which allows us to be manipulated. And then we are at the beck and call of those who use these emotions to gain power. And that, to me, is the description of what's happening in our society. And because of it, we are becoming like that. All of us. In our own ways. Well, I don't want to say all of us, but hopefully you're not. And I'm trying to guard against it. Those are all the thoughts going through my head today. As I see another tragedy. A boy who somehow, in his mind, thought that this was the next step in his life, to pick up a firearm and go and randomly shoot at a bunch of kids at his school. Think that he saw them as human? No. Nope. Ugh. I'm not sure what we're going to do. Bo Brinker, thank you for liking the stream and for joining us tonight. We've got to choose better. We have got to stop reacting and start acting. We have got to start thinking about who we are becoming in our fight. And to me, this is what good leadership does, and we don't have it right now. Good leadership defines who we are to become in our battle. And if we become so toxic and so hate-filled and so angry, just so that we can avoid a social program or we can get a tax cut, then we have lost the battle. Because what are you in the end, you know? What are you? Okay. All right. Any other comments on that? I will gladly pass them on and share them. I did have a couple of other things on my list tonight. The Omicron variant getting a lot of attention, causing a lot of concern. So as I do, I have been reading what is available. I've been checking. There's not a lot of studies yet. It's really early, but I did want to maybe speak peace to you a little bit. We should be okay. One last comment from Mike. He says, I'm willing to wager that the 15-year-old boy saw all those as people that hated him. Whether they did or not, that doesn't matter. That was his perception. You ask any kid that lashes out, they will commonly state that no one listens to them about anything, so they have to get people's attention in the worst possible way. We just don't know at this point. But like I said, there are some common threads that weave through most shooters. And one of the most common is not violent video games. That's actually very uncommon. It's not even bullying. It's extreme isolation. And so that's something parents, you can watch out for and try and guard against. Because that is one of the very common themes among younger male shooters. They don't run in those groups with other people, and that I firmly believe that a key to good mental health is constant human interaction, and they just don't get it.